If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it, because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it, would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated.
That, my friends, is the beautiful voice of Amanda Gorman, and she'll be giving us 7 super tips on today's Super You podcast.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they
are
hard.
I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super.
Super You. Well, thank you so much for tuning in, as I say, to the Super You podcast, the podcast designed to unlock and unleash the superpower that is within all of us. I am your host, Eric Qualman. Most of you know me as Equal Man. Today's show is sponsored by Amazon Prime. It's crazy. You can get almost anything the next day, and that's very important during this pandemic. So again, use Amazon Prime. You can also order books on Amazon Prime, obviously. And thanks for making my book, The Focus Project, a number one new release on Amazon. But on today's show, we've got the beautiful voice of Amanda Gorman. Those not familiar with Amanda Gorman, she is only 22, is the youngest inaugural poet in U.S. history, as well as an award-winning writer and cum laude graduate of Harvard University, where she studied sociology. She has written for the New York Times and has 3 books forthcoming with Penguin Random House. So without further ado, here is tip number 1 from Amanda Gorman.
Most of my life, I was particularly terrified of speaking up because I had a speech impediment, which made it difficult to pronounce certain letters, sounds, and I felt like I was fine writing on the page, but once I got on stage, I was worried my words might jumble and stumble. What was the point in trying not to mumble these thoughts in my head if everything's already been said before? But finally, I had a moment of realization where I thought, if I choose not to speak out of fear, then there's no one that my silence is standing for. And so I came to realize that I cannot stand standing to the side, standing silent. I must find the strength to speak up. And one of the ways I do that is through this mantra where I call back to what I call honorary ancestors. These are people who might not be related to you by blood or by birth, but who are more than worth saying their names because you stand on their shoulders all the same. And it's only from the height of these shoulders that we might have the sight to see the mighty power of poetry, the power of language made accessible, expressible. Poetry is interesting because not everyone is going to become a great poet.
That's truly poetry in motion. That's from her TED-Ed talk when she was only 19, if you can believe that. Just crazy. Just truly poetry in motion. Here we are with tip number 2 from Amanda Gorman.
For me, it's always, you know, not only the question of, is what I'm writing as powerful as it can be? And then there's also the question of, how am I going to physically perform this as someone who still to this day struggles heavily with sound and with enunciation? And for me, it was a lot of practice makes perfect. Part of that included the flashcards of practicing words, but also, interestingly enough, something that I do sometimes to help me with my speech impediment is I will watch and listen to other great orators and try to embody them.
Like who?
Like Barack Obama, who's great. Martin Luther King, I'll watch his speeches because he's a phenomenal orator. But even like the cast of Hamilton, like there's so many R's in that. Aaron Burr, sir. And so I'll practice that song before a performance, and it really helps me work on what I need to work on.
Aaron Burr, sir. Man, if you haven't seen Hamilton, go check it out on Netflix. If you're like me, I didn't like it the first two times, but then all of a sudden you just fall in love with it the more you listen to that music and the delivery and the history that's interwoven into the songs. It's really amazing, quite amazing. So speaking of amazing, Amanda Gorman is amazing. She has a speech impediment, as she talks about. I do too. I mumble, and I'm a professional speaker. You'll hear it more on this podcast than when I'm on stage, because sometimes I'll get lazy during a podcast or more in interpersonal communication. I really struggle with that mumbling, but it's amazing how many people overcome speech impediments that then become kind of speakers, if you think about it. Lou Holtz, Barbara Walters, Bill Walton, on down the list. One thing she says, actually, practice makes perfect, is actually not correct. It's a saying, so I get what she's saying. I'm not saying I'm correcting Amanda Gorman. What I am saying is that you really should use the term proper practice leads to progress, and improper practice can lead to the wrong kind of permanence. So practice doesn't make perfect. Proper practice helps you lead to progress, because you never achieve perfection. It's just a nice soundbite, but it's something you got to really understand, is that practice doesn't make perfect. Proper practice leads to progress. All right, here we are with tip number 3.
I think for a lot of students at Harvard, and I will just speak for myself, you arrive and all of a sudden you are bestowed with the type of privilege that people around the world, you know, would give so much for. I remember a distinct memory when I was walking past Widener Hall Library, which is this gorgeous library, and I was just seeing all of these tourists with their faces pressed against the glass. And it was this moment of, I'm the one behind the glass. I'm the one with the power that this line of children visiting want to have access to. And for me, it was a question of, now that I'm here, now that I have this access, what am I going to do with it? And for me, it doesn't just stop at my own education or my own degree. It's taking the historical legacy of Harvard and what it represents and the type of power that it holds, and then translating that into my own work as an activist and a writer. Shot, I am not throwing away my shot. Hey, yo, I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. I am not throwing away my shot. Definitely sage advice. What are you going to do with your opportunity? And it ties in with the Hamilton song, I'm not going to throw away my shot. What are you going to do? I'm not going to throw away my shot. Success is certainly a choice in this digital era. That's why I get all excited. You've heard me get excited about it, that this is the best time ever to live. I know we're suffering through a pandemic, but just the opportunity that's in front of us because of the digitization of the globe, if you can get access to the internet, you can get a Harvard education for free. I'm not saying it's easy, but it is possible. So even if you're not behind the glass, you didn't get that opportunity that Amanda made for herself, that you can still make it happen. It might be a tougher road, but you can still make it happen. Success is certainly a choice in this digital era.
To me, words matter, and I think that's kind of what made this inauguration that much more sentimental and special. We've seen over the past few years the ways in which the power of words has been violated and misappropriated. And what I wanted to do is to kind of reclaim poetry as that site in which we can re-purify, re-sanctify not only the Capitol building that we saw violated, but the power of words, and to invest that in kind of the highest office of the land.
Words matter. Words are powerful. So remember that the next time you walk into any room before you say something, are your words going to be positive or are they going to be negative? Are they going to uplift the room or are they going to deflate the room? So remember, words are very powerful, whether they're spoken or whether they are written. That's why I always say, be quick to listen, slow to speak. Here we are with tip number 5.
But what I think really helps me is being really explicit about what I want to contribute out of my life. And that means writing it down, reciting it to myself. So if I know that what matters to me is family, my friends, my education, but also being, you know, a specific voice in this specific field, all of a sudden managing my time becomes so much easier, because rather than having everyone else decide what's important to me, I'm telling them, I'm vocalizing it. For example, even with pitching this book, every single meeting that I sat down and I was like, great, that's how much you want to offer. How much are we giving back to First Book? How much could we give then to this type of program that would do this with the books? And because I walk into my life, my meetings, the bus, my classes, already with those aims explicitly inscribed on my head, it becomes so much harder kind of for the chaos of politics and just daily life to knock those down. So I think any way that you can write down, whether it's on your wall, on your phone, or whatever, what really matters to you, to the boiled down dregs of the hot bottled tea of your life, what are the five ingredients? You know, when they're like gluten-free, water-free, whatever, like what are you free of in your life and what are the ingredients that you have? Write it down and also tell your friends, because my friends are really good. I have my friend right there, Aspen, who's going to hate me for pointing her out. Hey, who are really good at like reminding me, you know, oh, you know, that really sounds like you or something that you would do or something you wouldn't do. Thank you.
Spoiler alert, this is my favorite tip. I always tell you what my favorite tip is at the end of the show, but I'm going to give it to you right now. It is this one, because it's really about writing down what you want to achieve. So you have that always front and center. And remember these numbers, 10, 25, 50, 65, 95. Got it? 10, 25, 50, 65, 95. If you think of something that you want to do, you've got a 10% chance to achieve it. If you commit and say, I'm going to do that, now you've got a 25% chance. Now 50% jumps to 50% when you say when you're going to do it. If you share it with somebody, share with a friend, family member, someone, 65% likely to achieve it. Now how do we jump to 95, that last number I gave you? Jump to 95 by having someone or more than someone, maybe multiple people, hold you accountable for it. So again, 10, 25, 50, 65, 95. That's how you achieve stuff. Write it down, have it front and center. Or as Amanda mentions, otherwise the world will kind of take control of your schedule, will take control of your journey. So really write that down, set your goals, and then hold yourself accountable to them and also have other people hold you accountable to them as well. All right, here we are with tip number 6.
Highlights, but for me, the moments that keep me going, the moments that rejuvenate me and why I do my work is kind of like a lot of the moments I think all of us have talked about on the panel. It's that person who comes up to you after the performance or after the reading and tells you their story. And I mean, one of the things that I continually deal with is growing up having a speech impediment and it coming back in moments when I'm most nervous. So you can imagine going live on MTV is kind of a moment when I'm a bit nervous about what I'm about to do. And, you know, trying to make decisions of how I want to navigate that. Do I want to change the way I speak? Do I want to change the way in which I present myself? And when I was named U.S. Youth Poet Laureate, I made a conscious decision to not erase those scars of myself and to not erase that process that I've had of dealing with an auditory processing disorder, of dealing with a speech impediment while being a speaker that travels around the country. And time again, I will get on stage and tell my story, and especially that I remember that first night when I was named U.S. Youth Poet Laureate at Gracie Mansion. There was a girl that came up to me with her mom, and she was like 6 years old, and she has these big brown eyes, and she starts talking to me about how she has that same exact auditory processing disorder that I have in a speech impediment, but because of me, she's inspired to write and share her voice. And I don't think highlights get better than that. I really don't. And it's not that I'm trying to convert people to poets. I'm not trying to make all the little children that I meet with become published authors. Like, that's not my duty. But my duty is to make them believe in themselves. And that has been the greatest highlight that I think I'll ever have in this position.
I can't help but stand up and applaud Amanda. You can hear the impediment come through on a couple of words there, but it's embrace your story. It's part of you. As I've always said, it's very uncomfortable to step into your story, especially at the beginning, but it's the most comfortable place you can live long term. I've done it myself. I've told you the story. I'm not going to reiterate here for your listeners, but it took me 15 years to kind of step into my story. I always used to say, oh, I can't believe that my name is Equal Man. Thought it was happening to me. And then one day I realized it was happening for me. I said, I can't believe I'm Equal Man. Let's step into being Equal Man. Let's help unlock other people's superpowers and have the Super You podcast, do the Super You show. And so I can't thank you enough for you listening out there. And I hope you're getting a lot out of today's 7 super tips. I know I am. And here we go into our final super tip, tip number 7.
Harvard has been very interesting, and I'll say something that I had to approach when I arrived there. You know, you go to Harvard, and the things that people used to describe is it's a lot of sharks who are used to being the biggest fish in the pond, and all of a sudden they're in the ocean, and you're like, whoa. You know, there's a giant squid over there who, like, published 8 books, you know, fixing cancer and, like, all of these other things. And, you know, I think especially when you're a woman, especially if you're a person of color, et cetera, you step into that type of Ivy League environment and you go, you know, oh, what an honor for me to be here at Harvard. And it kind of in my second year in, I started thinking, what an honor for Harvard for me to be here. And I don't say that with pretentiousness, I don't say that with ego, but it's me really owning up to the history and the legacy of the institutions that I've been lucky enough to have a key into. Now that I'm in, I kind of think of myself in some ways as Odysseus, like I'm in the Trojan horse. I'm like, yeah, hey guys, and then I'm like gonna dismantle it from the inside. So I think, you know, I came to Harvard coming from a background in LA with my school teachers who really taught me to think critically, think outside the box. And so I'm still very much that same person, but it's more so treating my own personal journey in itself as one of the first, I think, battlegrounds of the justice that I think needs to come from higher education.
No doubt about it, imposter syndrome is real. All of us experience it. I think all of us do. I mean, I've seen some people that you'd know super famous in the green room that experienced the same thing. I'm like, how can you have imposter syndrome? I was sitting here going, why am I in the room with this person? And so we all experience it. It's just really about owning that you're more than enough. That, hey, you're more than enough. Step in your story. You're more than enough. You are here for a reason. You are in this place. You are in this moment for a reason. Your hard work and those characteristics that make you uniquely you have placed you here. So when that imposter syndrome creeps in, acknowledge it and say, hey, I'm just like everybody else. I'm thinking I'm not worthy, but I am. There's a reason that I'm here. Please keep listening. That's our 7 super tips, but today's show is a little unique. We're going to have on the back end, after I get done with some of the sponsors and the reads, play Amanda Gorman's poem from Washington, D.C., from the inauguration, the thing that really put her on the map. So if you haven't heard it, it's worth staying on for the next couple of minutes and listening to that play out. But I want to thank, first and foremost, you, our listeners, for joining us here today on the Super You Podcast, the podcast designed to unlock and unleash the superpower within all of us. And I want to thank our sponsor, Amazon Prime. That's right, you can get anything basically next day, sometimes within the hour. And what a great thing during these challenging times, during these virtual times, to have that at our disposal. I know I get smiley boxes a couple times a week, and it's a great thing. Our kids get excited, they run out, they go, can I open this? Can I open this? So anyways, Amazon Prime, thank you so much. Also, a special thanks to TED-Ed, PBS, CNN, the Museum of Contemporary Art, and the Library of Congress. As mentioned, here we are going to play out the poem from Washington, D.C. that lit the world on fire from Amanda Gorman.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans, and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president, only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gazes not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first, we must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it. Would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So, while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised, but whole, benevolent, but bold, fierce, and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze-pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the West. We will rise from the wind-swept Northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the Midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked South. We will rebuild, reconcile, and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light if only we're brave enough to see it, if only we're brave enough to be it.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this as much as I did. Words are powerful. So every action you take, are you going to put more into that room? Is it going to be positive or it's going to be negative with your words, whether they're written or whether they are spoken? So until next time, please join me again on the next Super You podcast. But until next time, remember, this is Equal Man reminding all of us, it's not what we take from the world, it's what we leave behind.
7.
6.
5.
4.
3.
2.
1.
Super, 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 super,
super you.